Excellent. Thanks, Joe.
Okay, so the first order of business is the establishment of quorum, which has been established. Consideration of the minutes from the December 13th meeting. Is there any comments? Any amendments? Hearing none, the minutes are accepted. I guess now with Commissioner Ball here, we can listen to the auditors. So,
this is Chris Healy of Mengele Metzger Bar and Company, and thank you so much for joining us. If you're comfortable sitting, that's fine. If you want to stand, that's fine too.
Perfect. Thank you. So thank you for your time. I'm going to start with the first letter that in bold, about a third of the way down the page, says our responsibility in relation to the financial statement audit. So I am the audit partner with Mengele Metzger Bar that's responsible for overseeing your audit. I took over from Heather Lewis a couple years ago. Last year I had my first child about a week before your meeting, so I had to send somebody in my place, so I apologize for that. But I'm here now, so we did audit the financial statements of the fund for the year ended December 31, 2022. Our responsibility for the audit is to form and express an opinion about whether your financial statements are fairly presented in all material respects with generally accepted accounting principles. We plan and perform the audit to obtain reasonable assurance, but not absolute assurance, about the fact that your financial statements are free from material misstatement. We consider your internal controls as part of that process. We don't provide an opinion on your internal controls, but we do consider those in designing our audit procedures. We're responsible to communicate to you significant matters in relation to our audit, which is really covered by this communication. We have no significant control deficiencies to report to you. So this section references to another report that we'll look at here in a few minutes, but we didn't have any internal control deficiencies to report to you. We conducted our audit consistent with the planned scope and timing that was communicated in our engagement letter. Our engagement team, the firm, were required to be independent of the fund and maintain certain ethical responsibilities, and all those requirements were met. On the top of the next page, significant risks. Management override and improper revenue recognition are two of the more standard items that you would see in most audits. These are considered significant risks really due to the significance in relation to the financial statements as a whole. Your significant accounting policies are in footnote number 2 to the financial statements. You did implement 2 new standards this year related to leases and subscription-based information technology arrangements. Say that 10 times fast. There was really no impact to the fund as a result of implementing those standards. Required to be looked at this year, but you don't have anything that falls into that the definition of those standards. All financial statements have estimates. The most sensitive estimates affecting your financial statements relate to the New York State Pension Plan. That's information that's provided to you by the state and the state's actuaries. You also have other post-employment benefits payable obligation, which is your retiree health insurance. Again, that information is provided to you by an actuary that you hire to perform that calculation. And both of those being actuarial calculations, there's obviously a lot of significant estimates and assumptions that go into those calculations, which impacts the financial statements. Additionally, you have capital assets that the depreciable lives are estimated by management. So certainly some pieces of property and equipment might last longer or a shorter period of time than what that estimate is. So those are the most sensitive estimates. Related to financial statement disclosures, the same 3 items. It's your pension plan, your other post-employment benefits payable, and your capital assets are the most significant financial statement disclosures. We noted no significant or unusual transactions entered into during the year. We encountered no significant difficulties, no corrected or uncorrected misstatements that were material and required to be reported to you, no disagreements with management. Management provided us with a representation letter stating that they were truthful, accurate, and honest, gave us all the information that we requested. To our knowledge, there was no consultations with any other independent accountants, and really no other significant matters to report to you. So everything in this letter is standard communication that we're required to have with you, nothing out of the ordinary, so certainly good news there. Any questions on that before I move forward to the next portion? Excellent. So I'm going to move to the big bound packet, which is the financial statements themselves. And on page one, you'll find the independent auditor's report. And right at the top, in our opinion, the financial statements present fairly in all material respects the financial position of the fund as of December 31 and for the year then ended. So that's the clean, unmodified opinion that you're looking for, the highest level of assurance that we can provide as the auditor. Again, we conducted our audit in accordance with professional standards. You'll see some language in here related to prior period financial statements. So Marvin and Company did merge with Mengel Metzger Barr effective January 1st, 2023. So because your financial statements are comparative, we're just required to alert the reader of the financial statements that there was a change in firm name on those comparative statements. So it's still, we're part of that same firm, it's all together, but our professional standards essentially requires us to treat it as a different firm that audited that prior year column. No changes to that information or anything, you know, of that nature, just some additional language. Management is responsible for the financial statement, including internal controls. We are responsible for providing an opinion on the financial statements. We exercise professional judgment, identify and assess the risks of material misstatement, and design our procedures to address those risks. We obtain an understanding of internal control, but we don't provide an opinion on that internal control. We evaluate your accounting policies, and we believe that those are reasonable in relation to the financial statements as a whole. And if there were any uncertainty about whether the organization could continue on into the future, we would be required to add some additional language into the report here, but we have no such belief at this time. Required supplementary information, you have some additional information that's required by the Government Accounting Standards Board. That information is included in here. We evaluate that information and perform limited procedures, but we do not provide an opinion on that information. And then the last item here is the other required reporting in accordance with government auditing standards. So there's one more report in this package that we'll look at here in just a minute, and this just lets the reader of the financial statements know that that is an integral part of our audit. So the next section of your financial statements is management's discussion and analysis. I usually like to point out here that if you read nothing else in the financial statements, this is a great place to go look for the high-level summary of what happened during the year and what's forward-looking a little bit. If we move back to page 8, I'm only going to point out a few high-level items. Again, we had no adjustments proposed as part of the audit process, so the information that you're receiving on a periodic basis is accurate and good quality information to use for decision making. But in terms of some significant items to point out, so that state pension plan that I mentioned is a significant actuarial calculation. That flipped from a liability in 2021 to an asset for 2022. So you have recognized a proportionate share of the statewide system asset of about $73,000. That's really just based on the year end of the ERS plan and the timing of when the market was at a higher or lower point. So I would expect to see that flip back to a liability here in the next couple of years as the market conditions kind of continue to swing back and forth. But again, that information comes to you from the state. There's really, you have no control over what gets recorded in that respect. Down in the liability section, again, the post-employment benefits liability, so that's, again, retiree health insurance. That's an actuarial calculation of all of your current and former employees, what an actuary would expect you would pay for that retiree health insurance if you were to essentially close up shop and go out of business at the end of the year. Again, it's an actuarial calculation. There's various factors that go into that. And again, market conditions do have a fairly significant impact on that. Things like healthcare cost trend rates, the discount rate, all those things factor into that calculation. So you would expect to see some volatility in that number based on the current conditions. Your ending total net position is 75,000, as it has been for the last several years. As you know, that's the statutory maximum that you're allowed to carry. So nothing out of the ordinary or unexpected there. Again, your change in net position as a result of that is zero, because you go through and you allocate any of those additional funds that are left at the end of the year accordingly. So you're left with your $75,000 of net position at the end of the year. I'm not going to go through all the footnotes. A lot of good information in here. If you wanted more information about any of the numbers that you see on the financial statements, there's probably a footnote related to it, so that's a great place to start. A lot of this is just required information to be in here. So I'm actually going to skip ahead to our last report of the main financial statement audit, which is on page 36. So this is our report on internal control over financial reporting and on compliance in accordance with government auditing standards. So with any governmental organization that we audit, we're required to perform that audit in accordance with government auditing standards and issue this report. So again, it lets you know we audited financial statements, we considered your internal control on financial reporting. If we encountered anything that we deemed to be a significant deficiency or a material weakness in internal control, we would bring those matters to your attention, and we did not encounter any such matters, so there is nothing to report. Again, on compliance, we also consider compliance with relevant laws and regulations. So for your organization, you have some statutory limitations on certain items. We do perform tests over those items to ensure that you're in compliance. If we noted any non-compliance that was material to the financial statements or non-compliance with laws and regulations, we would bring those things to your attention. We're not aware of any of those things. We did not encounter any during our audit. So again, this report is really for the information of the board and management of the organization, and shouldn't really be used by anybody else. So those are the main standard reports. The last separate report that you have on its own is our report on compliance with the investment regulations. So Section 201.3 of Title II requires that you follow certain, invest in certain items. You're limited in what you're able to invest in. You really only hold cash and money market funds. So this report, it is required by the state, so we believe that you are in compliance with this section of the relevant laws and regulations. So overall, things went very smooth. Big thank you to Kim and certainly everybody that helps us out. I thought, the audit process was pretty smooth, and no findings, clean opinion, no non-compliance with laws and regulations or anything like that to report. So, thank you, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer those.
I do. And frankly, I had this discussion last week. I'd like to explore this with you and Mr. Flaherty. Apparently, the under promotion, there is a charge off for the administration of promotion. I have about 30%. Frankly, I see that as problematical. We are required by law, as you well know, to have a certain amount for administration. What is happening is, in my mind, which I found for the first time, that by taking promotion and considering that as somehow a separate category and charging off administration expenses to promotion, that what has happened is what ought to be decided within our administration cap of, I think, 6%, we are now well over that. And it appears to me that we are not in compliance with the law in that regard. Apparently, this has been going on well before I became chair. Do you have an opinion, and I'll rely on your opinion and Mr. Flaherty's opinion, that this is proper and not in violation of the cap?
So from an audit perspective, we set a materiality threshold where that's our focus is on that dollar threshold that would materially misstate the financial statements. So we do consider, you know, allocation of administration and things like that when we go through. I don't believe that there was a material difference in whether that item is there. I can understand your question from the compliance standpoint. I would have to do a little bit more, I'd have to look more into what's rolling up into there. You know, sitting here, it's hard to say. But that's certainly something we can look a little bit further at. But I don't believe from the audit perspective there's a material impact on the financial statements.
Well, I mean, material is this, we're talking about $250,000. That's material in anybody else's mind.
But we're talking about the component of that that's allocated.
That's the component. It's $250,000 every year out of $20 million. And as I understand it, your responsibility is to give us an opinion as to whether you find anything that's in compliance with the law. The law specifically puts a cap of 6%. Am I right? 6%?
That's correct. Well, actually, it's 4 and 5, and then every year
it goes up.
The NYTB gets it 5 and 6%.
Yeah. As I read it this last time, and I had a conversation with the executive director and the controller, by using, frankly, what I consider a sleight of hand, what we have done is we have taken administration and gone way above our cap by kind of folding it into promotion, which we don't do with any other category, by the way. It appears to me, and I think there have been some discussions in the past about this, that we are beyond the cap and therefore in non-compliance with the law.
But you're saying we're beyond the cap of the admin, right?
Yeah.
So, Chairman, I understand what you're saying. This issue had been discussed some time ago. I don't remember exactly when. But the rationale behind this is that when certain people, like for example, the executive director, are doing, you know, when Tracy's doing her job, a function, part of her job involves administration of the fund, and part of her job involves the promotion of the fund. And that's the basis upon which allocations, the theory of allocating her salary and benefits and other administrative expenses as among both buckets, admin and promo, has originated. I do think that there's merit to that. Tracy has administrative functions. She also has promotional functions. Other employees have promotion and administrative functions. But I do think that probably what should happen, if the board is comfortable with that general notion, is that there should probably be allocation studies done, time allocation studies done to support the allocation of time as among admin functions and promotional functions.
Yeah, but we don't, you know, there's no charge off, for example, for our controller for determining what the breeder awards are. I mean, this is the, we've somehow carved this out in some weird way, in my mind, that has taken it over. I mean, promotion, I think we're taking a charge off of 30% of the fund. I think $250,000. Is that the right?
About was it 250 or 350? Might have been 350,000.
That we budgeted? Yeah, something.
But, I think it's in the financials.
It is a huge amount of money, and it doesn't.
For a year.
It appears to me that we're doing this quite improperly. Now, what I was looking for in here, which is there is a charge off. Were you given any time studies or requested any time studies in terms of the charge off?
No time studies.
Isn't that standard? I mean, I've served on a number of boards. This is obviously not my first rodeo. And every time that we do charge offs, the accountants ask for time studies.
So again, yes, I would say that a best practice would be to have a time study to do that.
And why have you not done that?
That 30%, the consideration of the 30% that's being carried over, we evaluate for reasonableness based on the materiality of that amount to the rest of the financial statements. So we haven't identified that as an area that is of significant risk based on the dollar amounts of that allocation.
You don't consider $350,000 in a budget of $19 or $20 million material?
Kim, who did we speak with at his firm? Was it him or someone else? It was Chris. And I think you told us that you thought, I asked you about this allocation, and you said, well, you're more like a nonprofit, and that it's fairly common for nonprofits to divide expenses that way. So for anybody listening in that's not familiar with the discussion, so, for example, we'll, you know, put 30% of our rent, 30% of, you know, paper that we may buy, whatever, everything is split in that regard. I don't know how long that practice has gone on, certainly since 2010, and I suspect long before that.
No, I agree. I mean, I sit on a number of boards, but when there's a charge-off between funds or between things, there's a study done. For example, if you're doing a charge off on space,
right?
Somebody comes in and actually takes a ruler and says, you know, there's one third of the space is being used for this and two thirds of space is that. There doesn't seem to be any of that here.
When our previous comptroller was here, Jill, she did do a time study, but we didn't do any space studies because we don't have anybody specifically, you know, I wouldn't move to a particular space to do.
Understood. I don't mean it's time, but there apparently there is no time study here for this audit report. That's correct, right?
As far as I'm aware, correct.
It sounds like we've had a history, though, of time studies with Jill.
Correct. So,
right, Jill's done internal.
So at a point in time, there was time studies, we reviewed those and determined that they were reasonable, and that's carried forward, and without a material change in that allocation, we haven't.
When was the last time a time study was done?
I think Jill joined us in maybe 2013, so maybe 2014, 2015.
7 years ago.
It would have to be more recent. We started as your auditor. This was our seventh year,
okay.
So it was.
It well was when you started.
It was well into that period.
Okay.
So,
is it appropriate to do the time studies internally, or would that be something that would be?
I think the chairman would prefer we hire an outside firm to conduct.
We had discussed this, and I think it's, you know, certainly there's ways of doing it, but it would make sense to get an outside firm to do that.
Particularly since we seem to be in arrears.
Yeah, and we're going to have to, if this is what we're looking at, we're going to have to make some adjustments. I don't know how we do that, but we'll have to get to it. But it's a serious problem, in my mind. I'm not sure I know where to proceed from this. I think obviously we need to get a time shot, and we need to get a sense of what this charge off is, if at all. Because obviously $350,000, maybe we don't have, I don't have a handle on that. I mean, I appreciate the work that you two have done on this, but, you know, is it promotion? Is it, I think we need, first of all, a detailed study on how we came up with that. Who was responsible for that charge off? In terms of you know, what was done? Was it promotion or was it administration?
You mean when the study was done?
No, in terms of is that $350,000 all promotion? It seems to be not, frankly.
It so seems, for January through February of this year, $54,000 was allocated to promotions, which $42,000 of that was salaries and benefits.
Okay.
And then in the promotion line, we obviously have the promotions, the sponsorship contract, and just regular advertising. So when I back all that out, I left with only $54,000 that was allocated for the 2 months.
For 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's $225,000 a month, basically going about $300,000 a year, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
And how was that allocated? You just took the 30%?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what gets allocated is some of the depreciation, which is the sophomore cost for the award system. And then the only other item we have is the vehicle, the field inspector on vehicle. Salaries and benefits. Here we got the rent.
So salary and benefits, is that our total salaries and benefits?
Yeah. So I allocate, so it's $42,000. We got the salaries, we got the GASB allocations, payroll taxes, health insurance, the retirement contribution. So that 30% gets allocated.
Well, that's, okay. Okay.
And then any software...
Well, that's the problem, of course. We don't know what that 30% is. Well, you've done it because that's the way you've been told to do it.
Jill has the time studies that she has where everybody did their on their time sheets or whatever based on what activity they were doing for the time period, and then the 30%...
Well, the question is what they were... I mean, for example, it's some of that 30% of your salary would be allocated... But you don't do promotion, you do administration.
So this discussion was had years ago, at least about Joe, I'm sure Paul remembers it. A lot of the members are newer. And I mean, I don't, not that I have a great memory, but I remember some of these same questions coming up. You've got a staff, what is it, 5-6 people, right? Yeah.
Well, now we have 5 people, but there used to be a lot more people.
Yeah, so now there's 5, right?
Yeah.
The 3 people in the room.
Right, and Tracy, the 2 field inspectors.
And Adam and the 2 field inspectors. And, I mean, now this is just my opinion, but I think a significant amount of Tracy's time or salary or allocation would absolutely be promo. I definitely feel that way. The field inspectors, I'm not so sure, but I could be convinced, I suppose. I think Adam has a certain amount in his job because he is where the rubber meets the road. Although,
yes, he helps with the website. He posts stories. He edits stories for us.
This is just big picture, just from what I know. I would say that Adam might qualify for the 70-30 or whatever. Jill, I don't know. It seems to me that the new Jill, Kim, it just seems as a, outside looking in, that most of her salary would be admin. That's
her job.
Just what it seems like to me. So, Joe, you've been there. Kyle, you've been there for those discussions. Any comments?
Well, like I said before, I agree with you generally, Dr. Bowman. I think that a good amount of Tracy's time is devoted to promotional aspects. I think that some of Adam's time, particularly on, as it relates to the registrar and the website maintenance and upkeep, relates to promo. It's not something that one has to maintain. It does it for the promotion and fun. And I would imagine that field inspector jobs and Kim's job are almost entirely, not entirely.
Well, I was speaking because I wanted to find about this. So I was talking to the field inspectors maybe a week or so ago. And I said, what goes on? Well, they, he said they're always answering questions about the fund, the program, which is promotional. They take catalogs and stallion catalogs to the farms when they go and, discuss the stallions. They'll take, I've got like stickers that go on cars. It says, I love, respect, breed New York breds, and they hand them out if people want them. So they do, there is promotional aspect to what they do.
I think it's 30%, though. All right, I think what we need to do, going forward, we definitely need to do a new a study. Okay, and get that, try and get this straightened out some way or another. It's quite improper to take just the number. I've been through this many times, and just make an allocation without a study. And we need to do that. And that, you see, in my world, it's done every year. But
I do think it would be helpful for us to know when it was last done and what the justification was at that time for 3%. And then going forward, I agree, I think it needs to be renewed, the new time study. And then it should happen on a regular basis after that. I don't know if it's every year, every 2 years, but some sort of regular procedure for making sure, we had more employees then, we had less employees now, whatever. Makes sense to have some sort of regular schedule for reevaluating that.
Things to...
So what happens if let's say everybody finds it, we find out, all this is admin, so then we're over our admin budget by hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the 4% was set back in 1973 when the fund was started, and I'm sure they couldn't see into the future.
They didn't know about GASPE and things like that.
No, I mean, I think, first of all, of course, I agree with you that even the 6% is unrealistic as an administrative expense, but that's not my call, that's the legislator's call. Mm. I mean, I think going to legislator asking for a 10% would be more like it. I mean, I never heard of, but as they said, that's not my call. The call is the legislator's call, and the remedy is not to go against the law. Our job is to obey the law. If we don't like it, even we do. But let's cross that bridge when we come to it.
So, is there a feeling then that the board should authorize? It sounds to me like what we need to do is we need to identify and retain a firm.
I assume we have to go through a private group, but I can ask.
A private group as opposed to what?
the bringing state auditor. I prefer not to do that.
Yeah, I think it'd be maybe we get permission from the board to, try and find some firms that have experience doing a time study and get a couple of bids.
There's plenty of firms that can do this. They're done in many different contexts. You probably want a firm that has some knowledge of the equine industry, if possible.
Okay.
Can I say
more,
Joe?
Yeah, Joe, we're having trouble hearing you, but try your best. Okay, thank you.
And I think the 70-30, that was just an average of all five employees. So if Jill was doing her timesheet and she didn't have any promotional stuff, that would have lowered the percentage. So Tracy probably does more than 30% of promotion, but we're only doing 30% based on her salary because it was an average 70-30 split based on all five employees at the time of what they were doing. You know, so probably Jill's was the majority of it was probably admin. So hers was, brought that way down. We can look at it, individually and do, it'll be kind of like an accounting nightmare sort of to allocate like individually, like Tracy maybe 60% is promotion. So just take 60%, do it individually based on each employee rather than the average of the five employees.
Well, I think Commissioner Boyle's point is well taken that we need to have a study, whether it be inside or outside, and that because we're speculating now as to how that came about.
Well, I looked at her time studies briefly when we had that conversation, and there was all separate timesheets for each of the five employees. She looked at it and just allocated and did the average based on everybody's time, how they spent it for the week.
I agree that a study needs to be done either privately or internally or government, worst case. And it seems like if people came in with real and different numbers, like let's say Tracy came in at 65% promo and Kim came in at 95% admin, well then it passes the smell test, right? I mean, so I agree with that. I think fundamentally the 30% blanket thing, while it might approximate what it ends up being, is not legit. It's an artificial number.
Okay, and I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I just want to say that maybe I missed something, but I think the focus should be on a going forward basis. In other words, what are they doing in 2023, 24, 25? I don't think there's a need to go back.
I think you're right on that. First of all, it's
Water under the bridge.
Well, it's water under the bridge. Also, you're speculating, asking someone to tell you what you did 12 months ago, you know, on a specific day.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, that's useless, frankly. You know, I understand what Joe was having to say, but I think I would prefer us to go out and look at the bids and see what the price is going to be. If it's not, you know, if it's not outrageous, then we'll go ahead and do it. If it seems to be, then we'll do it in poor sense of what we're doing. So,
we need a resolution to say we'd like to reestablish, you know, the justification for allocations on admin and promotion.
Yes. Okay. I'll take that motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yep, opposed? Okay, motion carries. Then I take a motion to seek bids and bring them back to the board as to the cost of doing a motion, allocation study.
So
moved.
Yep.
Second.
Do we have to ask them to accept the financials?
What?
Do we ask them to accept the financials?
Well,
let's this study.
Do, yeah. Oh, okay. Let this. Me do this first. Okay. Yeah. All
I'm
of
sorry,
in favor.
I'm sorry. Was there one motion or two motions there?
There were two. Well, there are two motions now. The first motion was to do a study, and the second motion was to get bids to have a study done.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay. So those are both. Did I take a vote
on vote
that?
On the second one.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Okay, carried. Okay, so go ahead. Mr. Flaherty, you have something?
No.
No, okay. I don't know that I'm willing to do that. I think they're quite, frankly, I think they're quite deficient.
Because of the time allocation not being in.
No. I guess I'll take a motion that we accept it as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Yeah. Okay. Our controller.
Okay. So this morning I'm going to go over the February financials. And it's still pretty early in the year, but so far we have a strong financial position. For the month of February, we're looking at about $401,000 net income. And that's about $249,000 above what we budgeted and about $205,000 higher than last year. Year to date, we're looking at net income.
I'm sorry, to what do you ascribe that?
Net income?
Yeah, that we have such a jump.
So why do we have such a jump?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of twofold. Revenue were up a little bit. like $89,000 more than what we budgeted, $53,000 more than last year. But the biggest thing is when we look at the awards in total, the awards for the month of February were down about $168,000, $162,000 from last year. Year to date, it's about $282,000 less than what we budgeted. And revenue, year to date, we're looking at $224,000 more than what we budgeted, and about $256,000 more than last year. That's mainly due to VLTs being very strong. Year to date, we're running about $305,000 above prior year, and about $248,000 above what we budgeted for the VLTs. But those are the two things that are contributing to the variances. There was nothing really significant for the month of February in the financials, besides the awards being down and then revenue. And the only other thing that I wanted to go over with everybody is if we go to the last page, the accounts receivable, we're running about $1.3 million accounts receivable. This is mostly current, 0 to 60 days is representing about 86% of that balance. We know about Casgel, they have about $151,000 for that, of that balance. Capital, there's about $30,000 that was in the 0 to 60 days, but they paid that all during the month of March. Like I said, the majority of it is in the 0 to 60 days.
So the only thing really outstanding of concern is the Catskill LTV. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yep. And Chairman, we lost 3 days of racing due to weather cancellations. Correct. So that was 3 days of awards day.
So that would be the awards?
Yes, correct. Okay.
Anybody have any questions on that? Good report. Thank you. All right. I know Ms. Egan had emailed us at some point in time about the request for the racetrack chaplaincy, and I had asked her to, while I certainly agree with it, I thought it was best that we bring this not informally but at a board meeting. So
sure.
Would you like to go over that?
Sure. We reviewed a request from the New York Racetrack Chaplaincy to support their big fundraiser of the year is a brunch that they give during the race meet. And this year's honoree is trainer Todd Pletcher and his wife. And when they send the invitation out, they have different levels of giving, and they tell you where the money's going to go. So they're looking for money for their teen mentorship program, and that helps keep teenagers going to school, going to classes, and hopefully raising some of their sights to maybe even aim at college. And also they have two summer camp programs, one they run down at Belmont and one they run up in Saratoga. And that's so that the children of the backstretch workers have a summer camp to go to, and it's very popular. So anyway, last year our total giving to Racetrack Chaplaincy in New York was $15,000. So, you know, as financials continue strong, we can provide more money later in the year. But for now, I would very much like to let them know that they had this money coming in, and so that they know their teen mentorship program is funded and that they've got some funding towards their summer camp.
Okay, so your recommendation is $15,000?
Well, $10,000 now,
and then
we can do more later in the year.
Okay.
But for now, $10,000—that's what the promo committee approved. But the chairman thought it'd be nice for the entire board to hear what it is that we're doing.
Okay.
I just like
Jason, what sort of promotional
kick do we get from it? Well, we get recognition in their newsletters that they send out. We get recognition
in the brochures
that they put out for the event. And I think there's some coverage in the racing press as well of this event.
Yes,
we can pat ourselves on the back about it.
Yeah, but no, I think we do get recognition in the programs, and yes, that would satisfy.
And on
me
their
in
website
terms of promotion. Yeah. Okay. Any. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah.
Yes.
We also get several billboards at that event. This is a sponsor. Mm-hmm. And they do mention it in their, usually the recipient of the award this year, because he usually acknowledges the people that you know, put this thing together.
Anybody else discuss it?
I just think that it's a way of us as participants in the industry to support the social contract of taking care of the workers and the horses. You know, we do, like the event we had at the museum recently, highlighting the taking care of the horses when they're done racing, and this is a way of taking care of the people that take care of the horses. You know, I'm a firm believer, you're judged by how you take care of the least of your brethren. So this is from a PR standpoint, it's a touchdown. And from a moral standpoint, it's the right thing to do, my opinion.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. And make sure we, when we do our next giving out the checks, that they're there this time.
A racetrack shop, and see, they did come.
They did come?
Yes, they had representatives there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that.
Ramon Dominguez was there.
You were absolutely right.
Puppy.
I forgot about that. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, absolutely right. All right. Next is the 300,000-person Richmond. As you all remember at the last meeting, I had asked us to make sure we had something down in writing with the NYRA, and we have that. Anybody, do you want to talk to that, Ms. Egan?
Well, you all have a copy of the Person Richmond Agreement in front of you, and I think it covers not only the $300,000 that was available from unspent funds, but also the $900,000 that we budget in August and file that budget with the state in September. The new point in this is number three, NYRA shall utilize the additional person enrichment provided by the Breeding Fund in accordance with paragraph one above to support overnight New York bred and New York sired races, or New York bred stakes races, or New York sired stakes races. So what it's opening up there is the possibility for NYRA to write races for just New York sired horses. Right now, the only time they do that is in the sire stakes. This opens up the possibility to do something that our breeders have been asking for, our farm owners particularly, to write races that would just be eligible for New York sired horses, which means a horse that's foaled in Maryland or Pennsylvania could come and compete in that race. It wouldn't be eligible for awards from the fund, but it could run for the purse money, which would conceivably, you know, more starters in the gate, the better the handle is.
Okay, that sounds like...
Is number three correct? I thought we had updated that.
Yes, yes, we did update it to include the New York sired races. That is the...
Okay.
Yes, to support overnight New York bred and New York sired races.
You were
that's the new one, right? And New York sired races.
Okay. May I have a motion on that?
So second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Do we have a recusal on that? Can we note that for the record?
Yeah, Najah Rapuz. Kyle, please note that.
Ms. Egan, review and consideration.
Okay. Rather than print out all of our policies, these are policies that are available on our website, and so we sent you all the link so that you could look at them if you so choose. And these are policies that the public has to be able to read,
yes.
And some of the policies are recommended to us by the authority's budget office. And anyway, so there are no, we haven't made any changes in our policies since last year.
And these are, we're required to review them every year, as
yes.
I remember,
yes.
Right? And vote on them.
Right.
Okay. I assume everybody has looked at them. I have. I have nothing to add or subtract, so I'll take a motion to renew our fund policies.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Well, all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Now, under old business.
Under old business, we last time, at our last board meeting, we directed Kyle Flaherty to get in touch with OTB and announced that we were thinking about starting a legal procedure. And Kyle, you can fill in if I'm using the wrong words. But so now it's time to actually take a vote to see whether we shall have Kyle's firm outside of his retainer to us a look into continuing this action against Catskill OTB.
Commencing an action, actually.
Okay. Commencing the action.
Yeah. So the motion would be to allow or to authorize the chair to enter into a retainer with Kyle's firm to commence an action to get the money back that's owed to us, the 140, well, whatever it's going to be by then. What I had suggested to Mr. Flaherty is that we also bring in the standard bread, the ag fund, which is owed about a third of what ours is, and to, in mm-hmm. proportion to the money, so that we share the expenses so that we could have that done. And I've talked to the executive director of that fund, and they're happy with that as well. So as soon as so it would be contingent upon me getting an authorization from the state to be able to do that. But so if we pass this motion, then I'll be able to proceed much more rapidly than if we didn't. And I think it's way overdue. So
moved. Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Flaherty, I'll let you know as soon as I get some word. Hopefully, it'll be this week or next.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Is there any other business to go before the board? Hearing none, take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you all. Ms. Egan, do we have another date?
Yes. I have to look at my calendar.